unusually for some people, it isn't about not hearing. We all have experience of sound. Even as profoundly deaf, you still have an experience of sound. So it's trying to move the conversation onto a more interesting place.
Noch nicht Premiere.
Der Podcast der Münchner Biennale für Neues Musiktheater.
Und nun ist es schon die fünfte und letzte Folge unserer kleinen Podcast-Reihe Noch nicht Premiere. Heute treffe ich tatsächlich das erste Mal eine Person nicht live, sondern online. Es ist die irische Komponistin Eilish Nirian, die das Stück Hidden Heartache zusammen mit mehreren MusikerInnen und TänzerInnen und auch der Komponistin Julie Herndon entwickelt hat. Sie ist schwer hörend bzw. fast taub und deswegen hilft uns die Online-Situation mit einer Live-Transkription, die sie lesen lässt, was ich zu ihr sage. Das Gespräch ist auf Englisch und ja, danach sehen wir uns dann wahrscheinlich ganz bald auf der Biennale für Neues Musiktheater. Thank you for having me here, like meeting me, Eilish. Like we know each other from before already. And I'm very happy that you will be part in this Munich Biennale for New Music Theater. Yeah, like your piece, or not only your piece, but like of a whole team is called Hidden Heartache. Can you maybe talk a bit about the piece, how it happened, how it evolved, and yeah, I don't know, what was the initial point to start the project?
Sure. The starting point was Simone Keller's album. Simone is the pianist and music performer in the production. She released an album and a book publication in 2024 called Hidden Heartache, which is also the name of the show in English. And the theme of that book and that recording was to explore social inequality in music history. I think she wanted to develop that work further, and she wanted to look beyond, I think, those forms as they represent an archive, I guess, but wanted to create something that had a live performative format that's drawing heavily from her research and outcomes in those materials. I also think a key influence for her and the background to this work was the essay, which is called My Life as a Twin by Sandra Hetzel. That introduces ideas of split identity and alternative selves, and crucially for us in this work also, the idea of translation. And then from that, I think a central interest started to emerge, which was around translation as both an artistic and indeed a political act. When we're thinking of translation in regards to language, music, bodies, and of course, really crucially, perception. So from the very beginning of the project, it was clear that it should be inclusive as practice. So not just a theme of inclusion, but actually bringing together deaf and hearing performers and director, collaborators, choreographers, dramaturg, and dancers.
Amazing. Like, I'm really curious about these, yeah, what these translations can be. And I mean, we are already like, we are talking now also in a translation setting for the ones who listen to the podcast. You read the transcription, the live transcription of my words and like answer to them. So happy that we have this technique. Can you tell a bit more about this, the actual piece? Like, what can I imagine, or what will happen?
Well, Hidden Heartache is a music theatre piece. And I guess somewhat unusually, it's in body language. So there's no linear narrative as such, but the piece really is a process of searching for a mutual understanding. And it's back to this idea of translation again. Because for deaf people, translation and communication and interpretation is the core aspect of our day-to-day, how we work in the world. So for us, we're constantly trying to translate, trying to understand, trying to decipher what people mean and also what isn't being said. So there's a great number of things occurring simultaneously. And in this work, we have two deaf and two hearing performers. Both of them simply encounter each other in the stage space. And from that, misunderstandings, dependencies, and then moments of connection gradually unfold. So the space then becomes a place where music and movement and perception continuously transform into each other. And then we also have what we're referring to as a utopian layer. And that's the attempt to imagine a form of communication which is beyond translation, which brings us back to the idea of body language.
And so there are now four performers, and one of the performers is Simone Keller also, the musician you mentioned, where the inspiration came from. So I imagine a bit more, complex composition process, not only you sitting at the desk and writing notes down, but can you tell a bit about how you developed the piece and the translations with the performers, with you, like choreographers or the directors?
Absolutely. Well, communication is always essentially connected and entangled with power structures. And no more is this clearer than when it comes to a composer and a performer, who holds the power in that situation? And also, when you behold a deaf and hard of hearing or a deaf or hearing person, again, it comes back to power structures. Who has the ability, who has the capacity to understand and effect change in that kind of relationship? So when it came to the composition process, I wanted to look at this quite differently to how I normally work, because there's quite a team of us and people are coming from very different positions. So we have performers here working in Swiss German, in German, in Portuguese. So on the face of it, people are already speaking in different vocal languages. And then we have sign language, and then we have the physical language and composition. So I wanted to create a work which itself was focused on active listening. So we have a company of deaf and hearing performers. And for me, instead of providing a notated score, which for me is what is given, what's the expected with a composer, I guess, I wanted to try and do something different where I ask the question, what is listening? And of course, what I don't know is what listening is for a hearing person. I know what listening is for me, but I don't know what it's like in this case for Simone Keller, the musician at the heart of the piece. So I wanted to create a piece that actually puts the focus on her ability to listen, because that is what I don't have in the production. Mm-hmm. And two of our performers also don't understand the world through a hearing perspective. So in this production, I think it's also kind of crucial to understand that composition is not understood purely as writing music, but as the collective process between the sound, body, and the stage. So it's a number of things coming together. And the works in that case then are not simply performed, because they're coming from a different place entirely to begin with. So we're looking at material, information, sound, gesture, and it is reinterpreted and then transformed and ultimately redistributed within the ensemble and then to our audience.
Thank you.
Sounds amazing. Like it feels like no, like you're turning around also the bit, the game in a way of that. I mean, there's a wonderful discourse at the moment, like stronger and stronger about trying to understand as a hearing person to know how it is to listen or to perceive as a deaf person. But now you turn it around and you want to kind of get an idea of like, yeah, what is the hearing musician listening to? Yeah.
It seemed like a really good opportunity to try that, because this is not something I would otherwise have a chance to do. Because when I walk into a rehearsal or I go to a performance of my work, I'm usually the only deaf person there. So I don't really understand the process everybody else is going through. I only understand what I'm experiencing and what effort I'm making to try and work in that environment. So it seemed to me like a magical gift, really, to try and create something for this ensemble, because it's something that I've wanted to do for a very long time, but it just doesn't really come about. You know, for so long, deaf and hard of hearing creators, artists, dancers, choreographers, composers, musicians have really not been part of the conversation. We've not really been in the room. Work has been made about people with disabilities and deafness and blindness. But I just thought, well, why not actually create this from the ground up and put the focus on hearing and what the difference is between how the deaf and hearing performers actually perceive what is happening, and then respond to that, and also take a risk. It's an experiment. See what comes out of that process.
One musician and also composer we didn't mention yet is Julie Herndon. She is also part of the project. And yeah, I mean, a lot of people know her because she's a quite famous, artist also in the popular genres. How did this come together? What's your musical relation to her? What was the process together?
Well, we're back to this power hierarchies to some extent. We don't know each other. We've only begun to get to know each other through this project. We hadn't worked together previously. Simone has worked with Julie quite a few times in the past. But I think for Simone, it was important for her to come back to that initial question around what is equality in performance, in music, in this area we're passionate about and committed to. And for her, that meant it made sense to have both a deaf composer and a hearing composer. We've worked separately. We've worked and created separate work for the performance. Again, because I don't have Julie's facility for hearing, I don't understand how she creates work. So we're both making new work from very different perspectives here. But the work we created is separate. But I think in any case, collaborations between composers can be very challenging, especially when they're brought together externally. And I think in this case, it really felt essential that the piece holds two distinct perspectives on music and perception. So although we have very different backgrounds, we share quite a similar artistic attitude, actually, which is, I would say, a very careful and, you know, precise way of observing and reflecting, and a commitment to developing work that is personal, distinctive, and I guess to some extent courageous, because we both come into this with not knowing so much, and also having so much to question and to learn from the process, which is how I think writing music should always be. I think as soon as we start repeating ourselves and doing the same thing that we have done before and not genuinely taking risks, in terms of ability in the room and different perspective, then we're really not moving forward. So this is what this piece, this production, is a chance for us both to do in our separate ways.
Yeah, I actually feel, I mean, I have had these questions about, like, I don't know, situation of being deaf and ways of perception, but there was so much in it already now of all of it. I don't know, it's probably a bit repetition if I ask that again, or do you have the feeling you have something?
Sure. I would say, you know, the question of perception really is an interesting one. I made a work a number of years ago, which is for one musician and one deaf performer. And the work is staged in a hotel room. So it's a real hotel room in a real hotel. And the audience come in, small little groups. They come into the hotel room and they don't know before then who is hearing, who is deaf, what's going to happen, what language is this in, how is this going to work. And deliberately, we kept a lot of that information away from the audience, because when you're deaf or hard of hearing and you're trying to experience the world, no one sends you a book to tell you this is what it's going to be like. Every single time we encounter a new situation, we're starting from absolutely the beginning all over again. Because we're dealing with different people and a world that itself is also disabling. You know, the barriers are actually in the construct of the world itself and the world around us. So there's something in there when it comes back to perception and just how much work deaf and disabled people put into the experience of living. So in this case, in this piece, we're talking about the we, and it's intentionally open. So the audience is heterogeneous. The piece itself then can be perceived on multiple levels, because also it's important to us to make a piece of work that has a number of entry points for lots of different types of people. So we have auditory for those who have the ability to hear. There's the visual, a presentation, which is around the movement, the rhythm, and also the spatial composition. And then there's the physical, so the vibration and resonance. And we're also using transducers in the piece, for example, as an additional way to try and make sound or aspects of sound and physicality more perceptible for our audiences and our performers. So the goal is really not a unified understanding of what it's about, but rather a shared experiential space in a theatre, despite everybody's different modes of communication and perception. So it's back to that idea of universal language. Is music a universal language? Or does it propose something else as situated, as subjective, as embodied? And that seems to me to be a very rich field to experiment with, to play with.
Yeah.
And that's what we've tried to do.
Yeah.
In Hidden Heartache.
Yeah. I like the openness about the situations you want to create, no? Like what you told about the hotel room. Seems to be like an exemplaric moment where you try, what you said about that as a hard hearing or deaf person, you're kind of, you're always starting from the scratch, and then you learn, and to actually maybe set up a situation where also hearing persons are starting from the scratch and then start to learn. So yeah, this probably relates like to your experience and the situation of like a hard hearing person. Yeah, I don't know how does this relate to the piece. You answered it already a bit, but is there something? I feel there's something in it that you see maybe the art or the music as maybe there's a vision or a tryout of a possible future or something in it? Or
I hope so. I think, you know, for me, the way that we've presented music for too long has been exclusionary. It only, especially in classical music and especially in contemporary classical music, there are so many expectations about who your audience is, who your performers are, who your composers are. And it's political. It comes down to money. It comes down to where you're from. It comes down to how privileged you've been, when you've had opportunities in life and what kind of opportunities you've been given. So, you know, this is a very important part of my identity and my practice. I make work that has no reference whatsoever to deafness and perception also. But for this piece, given that I'm also working with two deaf dancers and a choreographer, now these are people that I haven't had an opportunity to be in a room with before. Because what's interesting then is it's not just about me, it's about other deaf people who have a completely different way from me in understanding the world. So that's interesting. And that's, again, something I don't often get a chance to do, because we still seem to be the exception in the room. So I feel so much has to change around how we present music, how we talk about music. And also, we genuinely need to move forward at a great pace in regards to our audiences, and ask who is our audience and who isn't here and why aren't they here? Because we need to be more focused on the equality of the experience. It's very difficult to get it right. There is no such thing as getting it right. But having the conversation and building your access and your inclusion into what you do from the very beginning. Ask us, what do you need? We'll tell you what we need. And then we'll move on, because we want to talk about art. We want to see art. We want to experience music. We're just like everybody else. And I hope that this is an opportunity to start at a sophisticated level, looking at what are the nodes of communication here? What really is this deaf thing about? Because unusually for some people, it isn't about not hearing. We all have experience of sound. Even as profoundly deaf, you still have an experience of sound. So it's trying to move the conversation onto a more interesting place, and crucially embedding artistic intent within there and then moving forward. Because it's all about art. That's what we're all passionate about. Art and music and theatre and coming together and making good work. That's what's most important.
Thank you, Eilish, for these wonderful last words. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to when is it? The premiere on 15th of May. We see each other in Munich then.
Noch nicht Premiere.
Der Podcast der Münchner Biennale für Neues Musiktheater.